All right, good evening, everyone. Before we gavel our formal meeting into order, I'd like to bring forth a pre-gavel proclamation honoring the late Commissioner Nick Fish. Commissioner Fish, as you all know, served our community with great conviction for the Portland City Council for nearly 12 years. And today would have been his 62nd birthday. Today, we honor his life and his legacy to this great city. This morning, we're joined by Commissioner Fish's spouse, Patricia Schechter. Welcome, Patricia. We welcome you to the Portland City Council, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning. Am I coming through okay, Mayor Wheeler?
Yep, you sound
wonderful.
Good.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm not sure if my video is working, but I'll leave it to you to guide me a little. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, for the opportunity to come before you today. As Mr. Mayor pointed out, today would have been Nick Fish's 62nd birthday. It's very meaningful to me to be able to share a bit of this day with you, because as anyone who's lost a loved one can attest, that first year can be especially hard as the holiday and celebration calendar ticks by and we experience a bruising series of firsts without. So thank you. In this moment when our public institutions are being tested, Nick's legacy of optimism, of commitment, and collaborative spirit in public life feel to me like a balm and an inspiration. And I hope the same is for you too. I'm here mostly to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for the support and kindness that everyone at City Hall, the Fire Bureau, and well beyond in the city showed to me and my family after losing Nick. I tried to acknowledge each person who reached out with a card, a letter, flowers, donations, gifts, and many, many gestures seen and unseen in that difficult time. So I wrote a lot of thank you notes. I wrote hundreds of thank you notes. And as some of you may remember and know, Nick loved thank you notes. I'm sure you each have a series of your own. It's a value we really shared between us and in our family. The idea that you really almost can't thank people enough for the ways that they hold us up every day in ways that we can see and ways that we can't see. So like I said, it was a joy really to write hundreds of these thank you notes. And I know I missed a few people, and I know in particular that I missed Mayor Wheeler. And that one was not an accident. I know I accidentally missed some people. But I want to say that for you, Mr. Mayor, my words failed. So that is part of why I'm here today, so that you can see in my face how much I need to thank you. I hope you can see me because we're on Zoom. I thought we'd be in the building, but life is not allowing us. I'd now like to read the names of all Nick's former staff members in order to honor this very special group of brilliant individuals whom I regard as family. They are on to new paths and new modes of service now, which is our blessing in this community. And I will never, ever forget you. And they are Erico Aiton, Marielle Bossio, Aja Blair, Jennifer Calais, Asena Lawrence, Liam Frost, Jim Blackwood, George Hawker, Jamie Dunphy, Julia Comnes, Natalie Sept, Joe Wolfenstein, Todd Lofgren, Carmen Caballero Rubio, Myla Bryson, Emily York, Amira Streeter, Mariana Garcia Medina, Betsy Quintaga, Everett Wild, Sam Chase, Betsy Ames, may she rest in peace, Hannah Kuhn, David Wynn, Paige Spence, and Daniel Ledesma. This group are the close-in witnesses to Nick's devotion to the work of the city. Thank you, each and every one, for supporting him during his 11 years of joyful service in office, even while he was battling cancer. I will be ever grateful to the way each and every one of you cared for me and our children through the horror of losing him. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Patricia. And thank you for your heartfelt words. You are a picture of class and grace. And I want you to know that when we all thought about Nick, we thought about you too and your family, Maria and Chapin, and just the strength which you showed during Nick's very, very difficult last couple of years as he was going through his cancer treatment. And we've all come to love you, and we really appreciate you. Colleagues, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but if anybody wanted to say anything before I read the proclamation, this would be a good time.
I have remarks, Patricia, but
thank you.
I don't think I can get through them. So I'm going to keep it short. I want to thank you for this. I want to thank you for all your kind words. It's been really awe-inspiring to see how you have faced this challenge and loss with an bravery and open eyes and open heart. And I know that you have actually brought comfort to a lot of us in a moment when, you would think we would be comforting you. So I just want to appreciate your generosity and your eloquent words. And we all miss him, especially right now. There's just been so many times in this last 9 or 10 months when I've wondered, what would Nick say? What would Nick do? I really wish he was here. So thank you. And happy birthday, Nick.
Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner Daly. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Thank you, Patricia, for being here today. And just thank you for sharing Nick with us. It's a lot for a spouse to just be without a person while they're serving the city of Portland. There's a lot of hours out. There's a lot of time spent away, and was also a lot of times that Nick was able to bring you and your children into his realm here in the city, and we appreciated your willingness to do that. I do still have your thank you note along with all of his, and they'll be going to the archives in a few weeks. So I appreciate that. I mean, he did so many things so well. I've been thinking of Nick particularly as I'm working on the parks levy. I certainly miss Nick's fundraising ability. And he didn't view making calls to ask for campaign money as a necessary chore. He just loved it. He liked having a good reason to call people who could contribute to good causes, just to connect with them to find out their opinions. And I certainly believe that we can honor Nick today is by helping to support that measure. And Nick was so committed to our city. I posted a long statement when he passed, and I also will post another one today. But he really put his heart and soul into the place that you and he chose to call home. And he committed to our city, to his honor, to his family, and to his colleagues on the council. He was always trying to find ways that we could work together. I'm delighted that you mentioned Carmen Rubio. I understand that within minutes of telling Nick that I wasn't running for re-election, he called his former staff member and encouraged her to run. And he must be as delighted as I am that she will be my successor. And I do use the present tense. I believe beyond a shadow of doubt that there's another realm where the core being of a person lives on forever. And so I say to you, I mean, in this realm, Patricia, thank you. And I say in the present tense, thank you, Nick. Your legacy does live on.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Patricia, and to your fabulous young people. I just want to say that I served with Nick a very short time on a city council, but I have testified in front of Nick for over a decade before his passing. I've known him as a personal friend for a long time, and I really want to appreciate you naming all the people who have had the privilege of working with Nick Fish, because what I realized when you read that list is how many of those individuals are still fabulous public servants today. And I want you to know that we really, Nick set a standard that all of us, I'll speak for myself, that I hope to live up to. Because he was always, he always asked challenging questions. He was always looking for the connection with people, where the commonality was. And man, do we need that more today in our public realm than ever before. And so that's a legacy that I hope to carry on with that open mind, that open spirit, and that willingness to look for common ground. What a legacy that Nick has left at City Hall, and I would say throughout the city of Portland. And I, and as you can tell, none of us can get through this without choking up a bit, because it's actually hard to believe it's been a year. And so thank you, Patricia, to you and your family, and just know that Nick lives in our heart forever.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Dan. Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, Mayor. Hello, Patricia. Good morning. And to your children, Chafin and Maria. I just want to say that it's really is hard, those first. I know what you mean. And so I just know each one gets a little easier, but the first year is so raw. And it's really courageous of you to be with us today and to celebrate your spouse on his 62nd birthday. I've had a lot of opportunities to be lifted up by Nick over the years. I'll never forget walking from PSU to what was his office at the law firm, not far from City Hall. And the reason I mention that is because you walk like 4 or 5 blocks with Nick Fish and you would meet so many people, because Nick was a person on the streets that loved people and said hi. So I just always knew it'd take like 3 times as long to walk 4 blocks when you're with Commissioner Nick Fish. And you know that about him. And you shared your life with the city. And so I think the commitment of a political spouse says a lot. And your leadership at Portland State lives on. I'm so grateful that you're there. I'll just say that Commissioner Fish's name is mentioned so often. And as I sit in this office today, with 11 years of his good juju, I have nothing to do but be grateful and humbled by that. But I will say that over the last few couple weeks of onboarding, it's so fascinating how often his name comes up organically. It's so clear that he influenced every staffer that I've connected with at the city so far, and of course with people out in the community. Members of my newly appointed team have spent years working closely with Commissioner Fish, and they've taken special care to respectfully honor the transition of this office. I know that you had a chance to come in here, and there was one closet, a supply closet. Why would you have gone through that with detail? No one wants to go through a supply closet. Well, just the other day, my chief of staff, Kelly Torres, she sent a photo of an old-fashioned snow globe that she found in the closet. Inside were two black and white photos of Nick and you, Patricia, and we'll make sure that we get those to you.
Okay.
And I want to just, I just want to end with, I don't even know the details of this, but I know Portland State University is honoring Nick Fish, and I know that we'll make sure that we keep promoting that, because I know nothing would make him feel more loved and supported by the legacy of helping the students and the faculty at Portland State University School of Government. Anyway, I stand on some big shoulders. We all do, but your husband, Nick Fish's, were quite mighty. And I'm so grateful that you joined us today on this special occasion of his 62nd birthday. Have a great day. Be well. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And I'd like to thank Commissioner Fish's former staff for helping write this deeply meaningful proclamation. Patricia, we have a nice framed copy of the proclamation that we'll get to you and your family forthwith.
Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful.
And thanks to all who helped. So on behalf of the Portland City Council, it's my honor to read this proclamation on behalf of Commissioner Nick Fish. Whereas from 2008 to 2020, Nick Fish proudly served as a Portland City Commissioner. And whereas Commissioner Fish was renowned for his ability to bring together coalitions, cut through disagreements to find common ground, and to create shared wins. Whereas Commissioner Fish worked tirelessly for nearly 5 years with the offices of U.S. Senators Ron Wyden of Oregon and Chuck Schumer of New York and the Scanner News to successfully obtain the Medal of Honor posthumously for Sergeant Henry Johnson, a Black American World War I hero, and was invited to the White House by President Barack Obama for the ceremony. And whereas Commissioner Nick Fish was a leader in environmental progress by maintaining Portland's clean water systems, promoting green spaces and corridors, and advancing the city's commitment to the Portland Harbor Superfund site. And whereas under Commissioner Fish's leadership, the affordability of 11 of Portland's low-income housing buildings was preserved for the next 60 years for the people who will call them home. And whereas Commissioner Fish understood that the arts are the soul of our city and that we must act intentionally to ensure dancers, musicians, painters, filmmakers, sculptors, makers, and artists can all afford to live and work here. And whereas no Portlander was a bigger fan or sincere supporter of women's soccer, the community's vibrant arts and culture scene, and locally owned restaurants. And whereas Commissioner Fish showed the people of Portland that being a public servant is a calling deserving endless energy and boundless joy. And whereas Commissioner Fish inspired his staff, city employees, and the community with his unwavering love of Portland and his tireless work to make Portland a place where everyone could feel proud to live, to work, and to play. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim September 30th, 2020, to be Commissioner Nick Fish Day in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe this day.
Thank you so much. It's beautiful. It's just
thank you. Patricia, thank you for being here. And
thank you all. Great to see you. Thank you for all you're doing. I pray for you. I keep you close. Each and every one of you. You're doing great. Take care. Am I signing off now?
You're certainly welcome to, unless you'd like to stick around for the next four
hours. All right. I may have to do the next thing here. It's a work day too, but thank you. I'll have a great day.
Patricia?
Yeah.
You might want to hang around for the next couple of minutes because I am going to talk about Nick again in a moment in a completely different context.
Happy to.
So you might wish to stick around.
Thank you.
So thank you, colleagues, and thank you to all of Commissioner Fish's staff who helped us write this proclamation and honor our good friend and colleague, Nick Fish. There is a second issue here pre-gavel that I'd like to raise, and I think some others of you might have some comments as well. I'd like to thank everyone for the thoughtful recognition of the late Commissioner Nick Fish. Today, more than ever, I can tell you, I miss his common sense, his thoughtfulness, and his focus on collaboration and consensus. Commissioner Fish's legacy stands in stark contrast to the vitriol coming from the national stage. Like a virus infecting our body politic, intimidation and hate are being spread by Donald Trump. Given that threat, before we begin our council session, I want to take a few minutes to reflect on last night's presidential debate and give my colleagues an opportunity to do the same should they so wish. The president's behavior and comments last night are a stark reminder that our community must stand together against racism and hate. In the same way that we fight a virus, our community can and will come together to prevent, treat, and inoculate ourselves from the ugliness coming from Washington, D.C. Yesterday morning, city leaders met with the Western States Center for training about the history and the tactics of white supremacy. We learned about its hallmarks and how to recognize it. Then, last night, we saw it in action when Donald Trump refused to denounce white supremacy and his not-so-veiled call for his supporters to engage in intimidation at the polls and elsewhere. We all have the opportunity and indeed an obligation to stand against violence and hate. Our city and our nation are going through an historic transformation. People are demanding racial justice and fundamental change in virtually all of our public institutions. The challenge of creating that change is monumental. Nowhere is that challenge more monumental than with our public safety institutions. Those changes are made even more challenging by our president and by anyone engaged in acts of violence and vandalism, regardless of the political views that they hold. I want to make it clear to the president and to our community, violence and hate have no place in Portland. Those engaged in violence and hate are working in opposition to racial justice. They are creating the conditions that allow white supremacy and intimidation to thrive. If we stand together, we can prevent, treat, and end the virus of violence, hate, and intimidation infecting our community. Commissioner Ryan, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. I of course, always forget that I have my hand raised. So I will go ahead and jump in. I don't have any planned remarks. I really appreciate that you set some time and I appreciated your words. I'll just say that last night, one thing I need to let you all know is I have this game perhaps I play with myself. I challenge myself every day to not say one person's name. And so I won't do that today. And it's really helped. I started this about 3 months ago. I highly recommend it to anyone listening. It's really been helpful, seriously. I just want to acknowledge that last night as a city, why we were getting some attention on national television, I guess three shout outs. We as a city were gathering with a very engaged group, the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. And so we were all in, we were focused. We were doing a term I heard yesterday, racial intimacy. We were speaking courageously. We were being vulnerable. We were being open. We were being present with the truth. And that's what we do in Portland. And I was never so proud to be a member of this body as I was last night. why so many people were receiving that noise pollution. We were actually engaged in real work. And I can't think of a more important time where we lean in to the local community and local politics, and we do our best to not allow the virus to inoculate us. We have so much to do as Portlanders, and I'm just grateful to be on this team at this time to move forward. And I thank you for this time and this moment. And I really, really think the voters will get it right in November. I'm an optimist, and I pray that we will be safe after the results are in, and we can move forward and avoid what we have to be prepared for. So thank you for this moment in time.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you very much for creating this space. I want to say that I think what the City Council did yesterday was pretty historic. A year ago, when we passed a resolution condemning whites, nationalists and white supremacy, we made a commitment that we were going to train all city staff and how to be able to identify how white nationalists operate and work. And we made a commitment that we would start with ourselves as the City Council, as the leadership in the city of Portland. And we started that progress, that process yesterday. And as far as the national debate, I was so thrilled that I was totally engaged in budget deliberations and conversations and wasn't subjected to the Saturday Night Live skit that became of the debate. But let me be clear, it's going to take all Portlanders to stand up to this divisive rhetoric, to this racial divide. We are stronger together if we as a community are very clear about what we will and will not tolerate. And I will take this moment to greatly appreciate the counter protesters who showed up last Saturday and were very intentional about not engaging with the white nationalists that we knew came specifically to create fear and hate and violence. I want to thank them for understanding that it wasn't about the protest. It was about setting us up so that 45 would have something to talk about last night. And it's clear to all of us that he had nothing to talk about last night. But I want to challenge all of us today to be prepared for the potential for disruption after the November election. It is clear that there is a national effort to create chaos and fear around the election. We are so lucky in Oregon to have been voting by mail for over a generation, but that doesn't mean that we will not be the subject of hate, divisiveness, and fear after the election. So I'm challenging all of us as the leadership in the city of Portland to have a plan, because the sooner we plan, the sooner we know how we will respond to make sure that all Portlanders will be safe and will not have to fear leaving their house. So thank you, Mayor, for this opportunity this morning. And thank you, Portlanders, for standing up and showing that we will not be intimidated. We will not live in fear, and we will love our brothers and sisters, regardless of what language they speak, what their sexual orientation is, what race they are, what their religious background is. We will love our neighbors because that's who we are in the city of Portland. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for the opportunity to greet my radical left democratic colleagues in this beautiful anarchist jurisdiction of Portland, Oregon, as the current occupant of the White House likes to refer to us. Commissioner Ryan, I'm with you. I can't bear to say his name, and I can't bear to call him president. So I will call him the occupant of the White House. We did have an incredible community conversation last night, and I was anxious about missing the debate. I now deeply regret watching it. I felt absolutely sick to my stomach. What a shameful display, and what an irresponsible and dangerous person the occupant of the White House is. That wasn't a dog whistle for racists. It was a bullhorn. I am just beside myself. But I will say, whatever he slings and arrows he throws our way, if that's the opposite of who he is and what he represents, I'll take it. I think all future debates should come with mute buttons and perhaps isolation boxes. And fact checkers, that's the other thing. I also think maybe it should be illegal to lie repeatedly to the American people. But, you know, that's just me. I'm just going to end my off-the-cuff remarks by encouraging everyone to check your sources. Whether you're on the right or the left, you should know that you are receiving and broadcasting reliable, truthful information. There is just no room for this nonsense in our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. Commissioner Fritz.
Like others, and as particularly Commissioner Ryan, and I'm glad that Patricia Schechter stayed on, because you must be very happy with Nick's successor and the same manner that he approaches complex issues collaboratively, thoughtfully, and kindly. I'm just going to go back to what Commissioner Ryan said, focusing on the Western States training, focusing on the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing forum that we had. Those were meaningful. Those were difficult. Those were challenging, and challenging in a way that helped us all think about what are our values, what are our principles, how do we bring people together? How do we avoid ascribing blame? How do we acknowledge the challenge, the problems that need to be solved? And so that's what we as the council engaged in yesterday, and that's what we'll continue to do. It's always surprising to me how they always talk about our Democrat, we're such a democratic, I forget what Commissioner Udaly said that he called us, but you know, we're nonpartisan. We work with everybody. We have, I think, when I was running, we had 20% Republicans in our city, and we tried to serve every single one of them. And we know that there are differences of opinion, and that we need to work together to figure out the best way forward. It's not all one side or another. So that's what we need to focus on. And the occupants of the White House continues to try to draw attention on things that divide, kind of brushing under the rug for things like putting children in cages and ripping nursing babies from their mother's arms at the border and other completely reprehensible policies. So we in the city of Portland, we're under Mayor Wheeler, we're managing the COVID pandemic way better than the national level has. Mayor Wheeler was instrumental in getting Governor Brown to declare the emergency quickly and to reduce the spread of this awful disease. And that's something that we're continuing to work on. We're continuing to work on trying to help our community members, and be they property owners or renters, be they business owners or customers, be they employees or out of work. We're trying to help people get through this the huge challenges, and that's what we will continue to be focused on. Let's get on to be doing the public's business here in the great city of Portland.
Indeed. Thank you, colleagues. And before we move into the formal section of the council agenda, I just also want to thank Sheriff Mike Reese for his speedy fact check last night. He was described by the president as being the Sheriff of Portland. That's an impressive title. But he also was incorrectly shouted out as an endorser of Donald Trump. And Mike Reese made a very quick fact check and said that he has not endorsed the president, nor will he endorse the president. So I wanted to make that clear if people had not seen that correction to the record. All right, good morning, Carla. How are you today? Oh, she's gone. Oh, no. This is sad. I just realized this is our first meeting without Carla. All right, Keelan, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor.
All right, this is the morning session, the Wednesday, September 30th, 2020 session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, welcome to the big chair. We're excited to have you. You have big shoes to fill, but we know that you're already doing it. So thanks for your good work. Please call the roll.
Thank you, Mayor. Hardesty?
Sorry, here.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Ryan?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. And the City has made several avenues available to the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. I know Carla is absolutely doing that this morning. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGov, PDX, www.portlandoregon.gov, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to provide physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, your flexibility, and your continued understanding as we manage through these challenges to conduct the city's business. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Thank you, Mayor.
Hi, Robert.
To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Finally, please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Very good. Thank you. First up is communications, Keelan, item 769.
Request of Sky Homes to address council regarding activity on North Ramsey Boulevard, including shootings, people being hit by vehicles, buildings being shot, and lack of police.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Forgive me, this is my first meeting that I've attended. I'd like to kind of address everything that's been happening in North Portland in regards to the street racing, the shootings, the life-threatening activities that are happening here, and the lack of police coming down here, which I understand is difficult with everything that, you know, is happening downtown, but it's scary down here. People have been hit by vehicles. I provided written testimony a couple weeks ago with a letter that included videos and pictures. And we as businesses are doing what we can, but we're at a loss. We don't know what to do. We've found shell casings, a loaded gun on our property. Another neighboring business was shot at. Luckily, there was nobody on the premises when it happened. But I'd like to know where you guys stand on how to handle the situations where businesses are suffering, because we have customers and clients that come in here.
Does that complete your testimony?
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And just a quick footnote here. I have been meeting with different business district associations, chambers. Last Friday, I actually visited a number of small business owners, and I am absolutely hearing the concerns that are being expressed around public safety and around livability. And I am working with the Portland Police Bureau and social service providers and those who work with homeless populations to find some solutions that will provide some relief in the immediate term. So I want you to know I'm hearing from others exactly what you're expressing. I see it myself. I understand it. And I intend to approach it with a sense of urgency. So I appreciate your being here today.
Thank you.
Next individual, please, Keelan. 770.
Request of Cindy Puckett to address council regarding activity on Ramsey Boulevard, including illegal camping, street racers, and vandalism. And we heard from Cindy that she has canceled her request.
All right, thank you, Keelan. The next individual, 771, please.
Request of Dan Legree to address council regarding street racers and camps on Ramsey Street. And I'm not sure that Dan is on the line.
Let's put a call out. Dan, are you on the line?
There's someone who has called in. We can just check really quickly to see if that's Dan.
Is that the 6032 number you're looking at?
Yes.
Okay. If you're calling in on 6032, are you Dan? If so, can you unmute?
Unmute a star 6 on your phone.
Well, let's do this. If that is Dan and he hangs out, we'll make space for him later in the agenda to be able to speak if he'd like to do that, if he's available. With that, Keelan, could we please go to the consent agenda? Have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
We've had no requests.
Please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. We'll now move on to the regular agenda. The first item is 776. This is a second reading.
Authorize application to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for a grant in the amount of $408,910 for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistant Grant Program, FY2020, local solicitation to assist the Portland Metropolitan Area Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice Community to prevent and reduce crime and violence.
Thank you, Keelan. This is a second reading of a non-emergency ordinance. We've already heard a presentation and taken public testimony on this item. Is there any further business to discuss? Commissioner Udaly, you have your hand raised? Nope. Okay, good. Keelan, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
All right, the ordinance is adopted. Next item is item 777, an emergency ordinance.
Authorize changes to established safety net program, allowing the Director of Human Resources and Bureau Directors additional authority to enter into flexible safety net temporary leave, safety net severance, and reduction of hours agreements during FY 2020-21 and FY 2021-22.
Colleagues, this is a continuation of an item we heard back on September 10th. At that time, there were some questions and concerns raised by Commissioners Hardesty and Fritz and in some of the testimony to the ordinance. So I requested that this item be pulled back to my office to provide some additional time to be able to go through that information, both with your offices and with city staff. As a reminder, this ordinance authorizes additional options under the city's safety net program to support employees that need greater flexibility in their work schedules during the COVID-19 pandemic while still being able to maintain employee health benefits to support both the employees as well as their loved ones. We understand working parents are concerned about the dual obligations of parenting young children while facilitating remote learning and continuing to perform their jobs full time. I think a number of us are certainly struggling with that juggling act. We also understand that those employees with underlying health conditions may be concerned about their own individual safety. The options that will be offered to bureaus under this ordinance provide the dual benefits of supporting employees, particularly those who are balancing work and significant caregiver responsibilities, managing underlying health conditions, while also helping our bureaus to save funds during a tough budgetary situation. Human Resources Director Kathy Bless is here to present on the ordinance and to address the questions that were raised in the first hearing. Kathy, welcome, thank you, and take it away.
Thank you, and good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I am Kathy Bless, Director of Human Resources. I am here today to share new and additional information on item 777 for council consideration. When I spoke with council on September 10th, I heard feedback on a number of concerns related to the process and the tools used to determine what was offered within this ordinance. I heard the need for additional conversation, survey feedback, equitable decision-making, and more clarity on the goals related to this ordinance. So to clearly state the goals of the safety net program offered within this ordinance, it is to help address the real-life impacts and complexities of COVID-19 for our employees, to provide bureaus tools for cost-saving measures as they are impacted by economic shortfalls, and to work diligently to protect the diversity within the city's workforce during this very critical time. We have taken the 3 additional weeks to develop FAQs, templates, analyze the dependent care survey data, and have conversations with stakeholder groups, including the deep affinity group City Mamas and other interested stakeholders. With additional conversations and commitments to meet monthly with interested affinity group members to ensure good communication, I feel comfortable in moving forward in my request for you to adopt this ordinance today. Additionally, the dependent care survey results confirmed the desire for flexibility and related support that are available within the safety net programs. There were 600 respondents to the dependent care survey. 90% of those respondents indicated 3 areas of greatest concern: maintaining productivity and expectations and the inability to meet deadlines, balancing the need to work and provide care at the same time, and the inability to meet the needs of their dependents. For 92% of the respondents, they identified 4 top ways the city could help: flexible work schedules without a reduction of hours, paid leave under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, which is FFCRA, and then temporarily moving to a reduced schedule while maintaining full-time benefits, and then lastly, accessing unpaid leaves of absence, also while maintaining benefit coverage. Each of those interests are represented within this ordinance, with the exception of flexible work hours without a reduction, flexible work schedules without a reduction in hours. This omission from the ordinance is intentional because bureaus already have the authority to offer split schedules or work hours outside of the normal Monday through Friday schedule for non-represented employees. As we fulfill any bargaining obligations with our union partners related to this ordinance, we would also include this option for represented employees where appropriate. The data also showed a lack of clarity and employee understanding of programs that are already available within the FFCRA protections. And we have committed to provide additional information and a town hall with employees to ensure opportunities to communicate broadly and intentionally regarding existing support options move forward. The other tools, voluntary layoff and safety net severance, are for bureaus dealing with economic challenges and need to address cuts in their workforce. These tools help protect our newest and most diverse employees. Elshad Hajiev from BDS will share in just a few moments how these tools are important in addressing their budget and funding issues. We are also concerned about equity. Some bureaus will be constrained by needing to maintain service and staffing levels, especially bureaus with first responders, or those bureaus who may not be able to absorb the costs associated with offering some of these programs. Commissioner Hardesty, you had shared your concern during September 10th session, and I want to ensure that there is an understanding that these tools are not an entitlement, nor will every or any of these tools make sense both operationally and financially for first responders and other bureaus who provide critical services to our community. First responder bureaus will not be additionally burdened to offer these tools. BHR will work with bureau leadership and equity managers to ensure bureaus are using a consistent process to make decisions about what tools will be offered and then how decisions are prioritized. BHR will advocate to address process and employee concerns and do ongoing analysis to watch for discrepancies and or bias. We know employees are feeling frustrated and anxious about the pandemic. Child education, personal finances, worksite safety, and how to manage and support additional caregiver needs for elderly parents. As I said on September 10th, and is worth repeating today, it is important to acknowledge and honor the role of caregivers amongst our city employees and thank them. Caregivers help reduce the spread of COVID-19. They are thinking all the time about it because they're protecting their children, parents, families, and friends. They also run a greater risk of caregiver fatigue, and we should be concerned about them, their well-being, and the amount of support they are giving to others at their own expense. We are committed to continuing the conversation and discussion of options for these employees with intersectional identities moving forward. And those conversations include opportunities to expand donation programs, as Commissioner Fritz identified as an interest to evaluate. So before I turn it over to Elshad, I do want to propose an amendment to the ordinance. It is within section 1, item 6, and it is simply the last few words. I would like to propose we remove "and recall rights after 9 months." So item 6 should read, "To help avoid mandatory layoffs, the existing safety net program would see additional benefits by adding a safety net layoff program option for employees with bureau approval to voluntarily lay off and receive healthcare benefits for 3 months." That would be the end of item number 6. So we would move.
Kathy, can I ask you a question? Because I'm looking at my notes and there's more language after that. It says, "and receive health care benefits for 3 months." Oh, I see. The strike just didn't turn out. My printer is running out of ink.
Okay. And so, and it's, yeah, it's to strike "and recall rights after 9 months."
Got it. Okay.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Hardesty. And before we go on, Commissioner Hardesty, did you have a question?
Yes, Mayor, I did. Thank you. Thank you, Kathy, for your thoughtful consideration of the concerns that were raised when we last spoke about this issue. I guess for me, my most obvious question is, so what's the plan for first responder bureaus who also have caregiving responsibilities and still are required to show up? Are you looking at what you're going to offer to those bureaus who are not included in this ordinance?
Yeah, so we are continuing conversations with City Mamas to get some additional ideas. The donation programs, opportunities under protected leave, one of the things that was incredibly illuminating within the dependent care survey was the real lack of knowledge about what is available under the FFCRA protected leaves at this point. Nearly 48% of the 600 respondents had not taken any of the FFCRA leave, and 32% of that 600 didn't have any knowledge of what FFCRA is. And so we do have a commitment moving forward to ensure that we're really doing some due diligence in our own communication. That clearly is an area where we greatly need to improve. We will then also, through continued conversations with HRBPs and the leadership groups with each of those bureaus, seek a further understanding of how we can help and support those individuals who are first responders.
HRCP?
HRBP, business partner.
Okay, yeah. Acronyms.
I know, I'm sorry.
And so I guess my question would be, I am still concerned about how this can equitably be implemented across the city. What are the checks and balances? You said they're going to work with the equity managers, but what does that mean? Is there going to be a report back to the city council on a quarterly basis so that we can make corrections if necessary? What is your plan to make sure that our goals are actually met early enough for us to change course if need be?
Absolutely. And that's a really a great suggestion about frequent communication back to council offices. I think we can do that on an ad hoc basis and would be happy to do that moving forward. The checks and balances are outlined as part of the FAQ so that there's full transparency in how decisions would be made. The Bureau would need to make decisions about operational needs and then how their work could be distributed and maybe timelines moved out a bit to ensure that they could accommodate employees. Bureaus are encouraged to also understand what the interest is from their employees. So some type of survey, which we have a template developed that will push out to Bureau so they could use that as they assess the needs within their own Bureau. Based on that needs assessment, then there is a list of priorities on how individuals would be considered, giving priority certainly to those who have children at home, who are learning through Zoom, and then certainly those with underlying health conditions. So for the supportive kind of reduction of hours and flexible scheduling, that's how the priorities would be applied. Certainly for the safety net severance program, it would be a bit different because those are typically offered through Bureau management to individuals throughout the their Bureau based upon how close they might be to retirement or their interest in doing so.
Kathy, I'm going to recommend that it's not ad hoc, that it is a quarterly report back to the city council, who's taking advantage, what's the whether or not we are achieving our racial equity goals in this manner. Ad hoc doesn't work for me. I'm making a direct ask for a quarterly update on where we are and who's been able to take advantage of that opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Commissioner Daly has her hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
I want to appreciate the work of the City Mamas Advocacy Group. We know that even under normal circumstances that mothers perform undervalued and unpaid work in the home. And in this moment, mothers are most likely to be the ones bearing the burden of having children at home, supporting them in their distance learning, et cetera. My sympathy really goes out to these families. I know how challenging it is, And as the parent of an adult son with a disability, this is my lived experience as well. I have a full-time job of care providing on top of my official job of city commissioner. So I understand that you met with them. It was a little late in the process. I'm wondering how or if their concerns were incorporated and what that conversation is going to look like moving forward.
Absolutely. And thank you, Commissioner. We have Courtney Duke available this morning as well. I think she will offer some comments after Elshad Hajiev has an opportunity to also provide some comments from BDS. Would that work?
Sure. And then I guess I didn't realize that we were interrupting a longer presentation. So I will just state my second question now, and whoever is the most appropriate can answer it. So I've had employees at my bureaus take leave or even have to resign because of their family responsibilities during COVID. So I'm wondering if there are any kind of retroactive aspects of this ordinance that some employees would be able to benefit from now who have already taken a hit.
So that could be an amendment that you would offer to the program. Typically the ordinance is effective upon, because it's an emergency ordinance, it would be effective upon passing.
Okay, I'd like to just put that on the table to discuss with my colleagues. I'm not prepared to offer an amendment at this moment. I'd like to hear how everyone else feels about it. Thanks.
Thanks, Commissioner. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Kathy. Similarly, if this question is going to be answered, I'm happy to wait till the end of the presentation. I remember when we did the furloughs that there was great attention paid to how to people's ability to take a hit on their salary or wages, and that people with who were getting very the lowest wages in the city didn't have to take any furlough. Those with the middle took 1 week, and those at the upper took two. So this, I appreciate all the work that's been done on the safety net, and it certainly will work for be very helpful to those who can afford to lower their hours. So I'm interested to know if what we might be able to do for people who just can't afford to lower their hours. That's my question, is to make sure that the people who maybe don't have two incomes at home or for other reasons just can't afford to lower their hours.
Would you like me to address that now?
Sure, if it's not going to be covered later, that'd be great. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. The one of the options, of course, does allow split schedules without reducing someone's hours, and so therefore it would not impact someone's pay. I know that in and of itself can be very problematic because we are worried about the fatigue and well-being of the employee. And so as I know your interest is and other interests within council, what kind of donation opportunities are available. We are still continuing to look at the tax consequences to the donator so that we can clearly communicate what those are as individuals contemplate and we set up a donation type program. We have asked City Attorney's Office and got some preliminary information with regard to the taxability of the donation itself. And so just ensuring as we come back to council to talk further about what might be helpful to employees in those situations and our lower earners, how we can be helpful and that there's full transparency for anybody that's donating. So I hope that helps in your concern, but it definitely is a continuing conversation.
Thank you. Commissioner Udaly, did you have another Very good. Any further comments before I ask for public testimony? Or Kathy, did you have more presentation?
Yeah, I've got two folks. So I'll turn it over to Elshad right now.
Thank you.
Mayor, just very, very briefly, I had a housekeeping issue on the amendment. I wanted to just clarify if that's okay.
The amendment that was proposed by Commissioners Hardesty and Fritz?
Correct. And as I understand it, a proposed amendment is to strike the words "and recall rights after 9 months" from finding number 6. And that same language is in Directive B. And so I believe to carry out the intent of the amendment, that same language should be stricken from Directive B.
Kathy, does that square with you?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Robert, for catching that.
Sure.
Robert, you're a very good attorney.
Yes.
I'm glad you're on our side.
Too. So moved, Mayor.
All right. We'll just assume that's part of the amendment. And unless, Robert, that's just a consistency effort, so we don't need to have another amendment on the table.
Correct. If there's no objection, the amendment will be made to both Finding 6 and Directive B.
All right. Cool. Thank you. All right, anything else? Alshad was going to speak. Hi, Alshad, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. Alshad Hajiev, Deputy Director for Bureau of Development Services. I'm here today representing BDS and to lend our support to the cost savings measures and flexible options for employees outlined in the safety net ordinance presented by Cassie Blass. I'm going to start a little bit with a background on BDS and why this particular ordinance and options outlined are important to us and why they're important right now. BDS is 98% supported by fee revenues. We only receive approximately 2% of our funding from the general fund. We serve construction industry homeowners and community with all kinds of construction projects. And as you know, the economy was heavily damaged by the global pandemic and construction activity in Portland area too. Unfortunately, when we contacted our economists, the outlook is pretty grim for construction activity in Portland area. They're expecting that it's not gonna recover for at least 2 to 3 years from now. And even when it comes back, the recovery will be very slow. Which reflected in our revenues and the projects that are coming in to our bureau. So in the recent months, we've been heavily relying on our reserves to fund our operations. 70% of our expenditures are personnel expenditures. So we are actually in a very high probability of having some layoffs at the beginning of the next year. At that time, we reached out, actually, we put some proactive measures in place in the Bureau from the beginning of the pandemic in March. We stopped all non-essential expenditures. We put the hiring freeze in place. We're monitoring all of our workload parameters, revenues, expenditures, everything else. We reached out to BHR, to Cassie Blass, to explore with her what are the alternative options that we can put in place to avoid layoffs. Many of you remember that back in 2008-2009, Bureau of Development Services faced layoffs when we had to let go of almost half of our workforce. Since then, we put so much effort into building up that workforce, and especially the last 5 to 6 years, we made very conscious effort to bring women and people of color into classifications that are traditionally held by white males. So right now those efforts are in jeopardy because if we start layoffs, which again, a very high probability of that, it could happen. The people who were hired last in the last 5 to 6 years will be the first to leave the bureau. And these are the people who represent that diversity that we are trying to achieve in our bureau. So these options that are presented by Cassie Blass will allow Bureau to mitigate the impact of potential layoffs, specifically two options. The voluntary layoff and the targeted severance will help us greatly. We expect that we will be able to avoid 10 to 20 potential layoffs by using just those two options. The interest from employees and the options outlined in that ordinance is very high. We already held one session to talk about the financial situation in the Bureau and the potential options that's coming up. The interest is very high. The other thing is the timing. Unfortunately, as we speak, every single day, it's money, basically. It's the money that the Bureau has to use from our reserves. The sooner we adopt this ordinance, the sooner we make these options available to our employees, the better the impact of this ordinance on reducing those potential layoffs that we may have in our Bureau. I thank you for the opportunity to address you, and I want to thank Cassie Bless and her staff for helping us navigate and coming up with these options that may help us avoid the layoffs. Thank you.
Thank you. Kathy, you said there was...
Yeah, there's one more. I'll turn it over to Courtney Duke as a representative of City Mamas.
Hi, Courtney.
Hi. Thank you, Commissioners and Mayor. This is Courtney Duke. I'm a senior planner at the Bureau of Transportation, as well as working at the Emergency Center, again, starting on Monday. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz and Kathy Bless, for asking me to be here today. And also thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for your shout out as it relates to working parents. I would like to say thank you also to Kathy and her team. We did meet yesterday, and there were over 50 people on the call in the midst of work and working with our children and helping with school, both dads and moms, as well as the women's empowerment team. Kathy and her team worked with us over the last couple weeks. The FAQ that her team put together addresses a lot of the questions and concerns that we had, especially in terms of implementation. Kathy and her team committed to meeting with additional affinity groups and stakeholders. I think we talked about monthly, but we'll figure out the exact timing. And that was a really great thing to hear. We also gave some suggestions that I believe she's taking in terms of possibly having a town hall similar to what the budget office, Tom Reinhart's office is doing as it relates to entering into the buildings so that everybody can get the information. One of the main things that we talked about yesterday was just the amount of information out there and how people are getting it in so many different ways, but maybe we need to still keep giving it in different ways. So some people are better at hearing something, some people are better at getting an email. So if there's some places where everything is located in the same spot, also some additional education and information for managers and bureau directors. We also heard at the meeting that a lot of folks, as Kathy mentioned, don't even know that there are some of these existing tools available. I think what Kathy really made clear to us was that this is one of many tools and one of many things that the city and BHR are doing for employees rather than just one. And I think that was a concern that that employees had. And it sounded like Kathy and her team were putting together some information about those suite of options. Again, a lot of those have been out there for a while, but it's just, there's a lot going on and it's difficult to always know what's gonna work best for you and your family and also for managers and their employees to be able to balance the workload, supporting caregivers. And I also wanted to mention quickly that we also had a number of people on the call that are caregivers to elder parents and to disabled adults that Commissioner Udaly also mentioned. So we are also making sure that any of these suite of options also work for all caregivers, not just parents. And it sounds like that's exactly what Kathy and team are trying to do. And so that's another reason we would like to expand the conversation with our affinity groups and other folks to make sure that we're covering everyone who's a caregiver and an employee, not just a parent. Just double checking my quick notes. And Kathy and team sent out the FAQ to the leadership for us to review and give comments on. So we appreciated that connection as well. So we've been submitting comments. Those are due tomorrow, I think. And so we just appreciate the time they've spent working with us, and I appreciate the time here. I'm available for any questions today, and we'll continue to be working with all of our affinity groups and Kathy as I have the ability to move this forward and help with implementation.
Thank you, Courtney. Commissioner Fritz has her hand raised.
Thank you very much, Courtney. Thank you for your leadership in many different ways. So are you comfortable with us moving forward with this ordinance today and with the plan for engagement of employees moving forward?
Yes, I am, and nodding. I believe that the group felt that as well yesterday.
That's Thank great. You for asking. It certainly was worth taking the time, and I appreciate the responsiveness of the HR department. Thank you.
Thank you for giving us all the extra time.
Very good. Thanks. So with that, colleagues, unless you have any other questions, we'll see if there's any public testimony on this item.
No one has signed up.
Nobody has signed up? All right, good. It was a very thorough presentation. Commissioner Udaly, you were considering some sort of an amendment, or is that on the table or no?
Well, I mean, I'm interested in a little deliberation with my colleagues without knowing what the financial impact would be to make this retroactive. I'm not comfortable offering an amendment unless there's support on council.
I'll speak up. I'm happy with the ordinances proposed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mayor, if I may, Commissioner Udaly, I really think that we just need to continue to monitor it to see if it's doing what we've intended. So I think the first quarterly report back will be a great time to add changes, especially because we'll see what's happened in practice. I appreciate the hard work that's gone into being very thoughtful and listening, but I continue to be concerned when policies cover one part of our workforce, and then we say we're going to figure out the other part of the workforce at a later time. And so that continues to concern me. So I think having a commitment that we're going to have quarterly opportunities to change this as necessary, I think gives me comfort that supporting this today doesn't mean this is the last time we will be able to actually make substantial changes.
Sounds good. I'm totally fine with this.
All right, then with that, we'll take a vote on the Fritz/Hardesty amendment first that was requested by the Bureau. Keelan, please call the roll on the amendment.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's adopted to the main motion is amended. Please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Thank you, Kathy, for taking the time to reach out to people that are going to be impacted by this change and attempting to adapt this proposal to what you heard. I'm happy to hear that this is just one piece of the supports that we're going to put in place. But again, I want to make sure that we don't give opportunities for one segment of our workforce and not to others. And so you and I will need to talk before your quarterly check-in to find out how my first responder bureaus, who also have the same issues and concerns, are able to take advantage of this opportunity. And so I vote aye today, but look forward to the next conversation.
Udaly?
Did you say my name?
Yeah, sorry, Udaly.
Yes, okay. So I want to appreciate the work that BHR has done to offer flexibility to city employees who are balancing new challenges while also continuing to provide services that keep our city running. This is a positive step forward and a necessary one in order to be a responsible and considerate employer. I support further action to offer flexibility to employees dealing with unprecedented difficulties during these multiple crises. I also want to give a shout out to City Mamas for their advocacy and just acknowledge the uniquely challenging situation that a lot of that parents and in particular mothers find themselves in this moment. I vote aye.
Excuse me. Yeah, thank you very much, Kathy Bless, for taking the time to get this right. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for once again, very carefully and thoughtfully helping guide through the response to the COVID pandemic. This is hopefully going to be a model that maybe private employers could consider enacting in their companies, perhaps some of them already have. Thank you to City Mamas and particularly Courtney Duke and to the caregivers on my staff who are really doing amazing work with all of the challenges. I was stunned to read the article about the number of hours of instruction at Portland Public Schools this week, and glad that that's starting to get resolved. So, and we've never been in, at least I've never been in a pandemic before. We've never experienced something like this. So it's been forever since March, and it's also been very quick that we've been able to do so many good things and that we're continuing to focus on the things that matter most to the people who are affected. So thanks to everybody for this. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, I think I was a half hour literally into the job when we had this first conversation, and I really appreciate how it's evolved over the last few weeks. It shows that it's not always kicking the can. Sometimes it's buying time so we can be thoughtful. And as Commissioner Fritz said, we've never been here before. And so we have to have creative, adaptable moments like this. I think there's some shared sacrifice that I heard on this one, which is important during the pandemic and the economic uncertainty, and a lot of shared responsibility. I appreciate the dialogue with Commissioner Hardesty that you had with her, Kathy Bless, about making sure as we're implementing it that we have a lot of communication. This is, again, we've never been here before, so you're going to find out a lot as you implement this policy. And let's face it, it's great that with Elshad's presentation that it will be helpful budget item at this moment as we try to stretch our public resources as far as possible during this pandemic. So anyway, I'm really impressed with the progress of this, and it's always great to hear parents coming together to do what's best during these uncertain times, because virtual learning is clearly challenging. I'm glad that we're going to have data about the equity lens when it comes to this and who's using it and what proportion of our employees are able to tap into this as well. And so in your quarterly updates, I'll just ask that we make sure we have all the data broken down by race. I'm sure you're ready to do that, but just wanted to make that public. Anyway, I'm a big eye.
Wheeler.
Thank you. I want to thank Kathy Bless and her team within BHR, Heidi Brown, of course, Chief Deputy City Attorney, and our union partners, the City Mamas, Bureau Equity Managers, and other employees who provided really critical feedback and did a good job of expressing concerns regarding equity and some other considerations as we figure out how to best support our city employees. This ordinance, as several commissioners have indicated, is a starting point. The Bureau of Human Resources is going to continue to seek feedback from employees and bureaus to look for other ways the city can support its working parents during these challenging times. We expect BHR will return to council with additional ideas based on continued feedback from employees and bureaus. And I was pleased, Director Bless, that you already committed to do that. So I'm very happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended. Thanks for your great work. The next item on the regular agenda, 778, a resolution.
Approve and terminate limited tax exemptions for properties under the Home Buyer Opportunity Limited Tax Exemption Program.
The Portland Housing Bureau, of course, administers the city's tax exemption programs. The Home Buyer Opportunity Limited Tax Exemption Program, often known as HOLTI, provides a 10-year property tax exemption for low to moderate income home buyers, making home ownership more obtainable for families in Portland. Home builders apply for the tax exemption prior to starting construction on their new homes. The Housing Bureau approves builder applications through filing a resolution with the council several times each year. 10 properties are being approved for the program through this particular resolution. When a developer sells a home over the price limit to a buyer who does not income qualify as a cash sale or doesn't complete construction within the two-year time frame from council approval, the exemption is then removed. Additionally, if a home isn't owner-occupied during the exemption period, the exemption is also removed under those circumstances. Before an exemption is terminated, owners have an opportunity to appeal decisions made by the city. And with this resolution, 28 property tax exemptions are being removed. And with that, we'll hear from Dori Van Bockel from the Portland Housing Bureau. She is the PHB Development Incentives Program Manager. And we know you well. Hello, Dori.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Just to add to that, PHB confirms homebuyer eligibility with each sale of the property, and owner occupancy is part of the compliance from initial sale through the 10-year tax exemption period. So we're ensuring compliance with both city code and state statute during that time frame. So we run regular audits and work in partnership with Multnomah County to confirm property ownership with those guidelines. Homebuyers are notified of noncompliance, and if there's not a remedy, exemptions are removed. In this particular resolution, many of the properties are ones that were developed by Habitat for Humanity. PHB worked with the city's Office of Government Relations to take action with the state legislature last spring, and this would have permitted PHB to allow more time for developers to build housing approved for the tax exemption on a case-by-case basis. In this case, Habitat for Humanity had a few reasons as to, based on their business model, how that it might take a little longer for construction. So this could have allowed them to maintain the exemption for the homeowners that so desperately need it. Unfortunately, even though the bill we brought forward, including that provision, had passed through the state Senate, the session was derailed by the Republican walkout and canceled before the House was able to vote on it too. So PHB and Office of Government Relations are working on bringing back this change within the next session in order to have to avoid having to terminate exemptions on otherwise eligible properties and to ensure the program is available to homebuyers in the future. So just wanted to make that particular note about this action. The HOLTI program works in tandem with several other incentive programs to help support home ownership for first-time home buyers across the city. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner Daly.
Thanks, Mayor. Well, one of many frustrations about the last legislative session, and so disappointing, if that bill were to pass, is there any way to reinstate the exemption for people who are losing it today?
Unfortunately, no. It's not allowed by statute to do so.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
All right. This is anything else before I move this along? This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second. I'm sorry, it's a resolution. I have to call the roll on this. Sorry.
Hardesty?
Aye.
You Daly?
Thank you, Dori. Aye.
Fritz?
Good work as usual. Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The resolution is adopted. And colleagues, for the next 12, I'll take care of it in a minute. 779, please, Keelan.
Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for COES on North Interstate, located at 5460 North Interstate Avenue.
Colleagues, by tradition, we do not put emergency clauses on these items, so the Housing Bureau has requested that I make a motion to remove the emergency clause. I'm moving it.
Second.
You have a second. Any further discussion on that question? Call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
You Daly?
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. It's amended. It's now a non-emergency item. And with that, colleagues, it's been brought to my, we did that. Good. Dory, you're on.
Okay. I do have a short presentation. It also includes the next item, but I can.
Keelan, can you read item 780, please?
Amend approved application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for Markham Hill Apartments Building 2, located at 3178 Southwest 12th Avenue, to increase the number of affordable units.
Colleague, I move to remove the emergency clause from item 780. Can I get a second?
Second.
Commissioner Hardesty just beat you out there. Commissioner Daly.
It's not a competition.
I think it's fun. Keelan, could you please call the roll on the amendment?
Hardesty.
Aye. I'm just quick on the button.
New Daly.
Quicker than me. Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
What button? Aye.
Wheeler.
I'm in the same boat, Dan. Aye. The amendment is adopted. And just before we get into the presentation on item 780, I want to note a minor correction to the impact statement. It uses the number 44 in reference to units. The number should have been 42, not 44. It's a Scribner's error. Robert, can you confirm it does not require an amendment?
Yes, I can confirm that.
Okay, very good. Dory, you're up.
All right. Let me put this presentation forward. All right, we are here to discuss, my name is Dory Van Bockel, as introduced by the mayor, and good morning again. Also, Matthew Schaubold is present as well as the policy and planning manager with the Housing Bureau. Just to go through a couple of things about the Inclusionary Housing Program. So again, starting in February of 2017, any building adding 20 or more units is required to contribute to the city's affordable housing inventory through the Inclusionary Housing Program. Developers must choose from several options in order to fulfill inclusionary housing requirements, providing affordable units in an otherwise market rate building, sending units to another building, or paying into the Inclusionary Housing Fund. The Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption, or MULTI program, is one of the financial incentives provided to inclusionary housing buildings, making units affordable rather than paying the fee in lieu. Each MULTI application comes before City Council for approval as required by state statute. And again, the two buildings we're discussing today are the Markham Hill Apartments Building 2, which is an amendment due to a change, as well as the COES project on North Interstate. So Markham Hill Apartments Building 2 has come before council before through Ordinance 189645. There's still five stories in this building, but the unit mix has changed significantly from being a 24-unit building to a 46-unit building. This was passed originally in August of last year and authorized a 10-year property tax exemption with two one-bedroom, 14 two-bedroom, and 8 three-bedroom units. And now it has changed to having 14 studios and 32 one-bedroom units. So they've removed the larger bedroom sizes within the building. As such, the requirement for affordable units was redistributed, requiring us to make this factual change to the multi-ordinance. So this project with 46 units will have 8%, which equals out to just 4 units, 1 studio and 3 one-bedroom unit, affordable to households earning no more than 60% MFI for 99 years, and as one of the options available to them through the multi-program or inclusionary housing program as such. So to break down a little bit as far as how the tax benefit applies to the project, as well as then we'll look at rents for the home or the renters. Prior, the per year taxes were a little different just based on the number of units increasing, the per unit value decreases under this new application. And there's a just an idea of the rent discount on average between market and studio rents is over $500 a month, the way that this building is distributed. So if there's any questions on that particular project, I can address them before moving on, or we can address certainly any questions about the program or as presented for both projects later.
Mayor, if I may.
Yeah, sorry, Commissioner Udaly, I was struggling to get to my button. Yeah.
Okay. Dory, could you go back one more slide to the tax? I find this page very challenging to understand. What I'm interested in is whether we're getting a good value for this tax abatement. So it would be comparing, and I realize, you know, because taxes and rent fluctuate, there's no way to know for sure, but just based on today's tax rates and market rate rent, if we extrapolate out, who's getting more benefit? The developer for the tax abatements or the city for the reduced rents?
So in this particular case, if we would compare then the second table, since that's the current application,
okay,
and on a per unit basis, each year over the full 99 year period, you know, dumping all of this into an Excel sheet and calculating it out, there would be a $90 per year benefit to the building owner on this one. And sorry, my cat. And then compared to a monthly rent discount, that, you know, the difference between rents on a monthly basis is $581 on average. So
could you go back again to the tax?
Yeah.
So I find that. Okay, I see. The per year for 10 years. Okay, it's starting to, it's just the information is organized in kind of an odd way, and there's no, there we go. Okay, all right, so they get $90 per year per unit?
Yes.
And it's a $500 a month reduction?
Of rent on average. Rent.
Okay. I like the sound of that.
I mean, obviously, it's very different for each building.
Yeah.
Based on a lot of different factors.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Artisty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Dory. My question is, so we went from having family size units to once again studios and one bedroom. Is in a multi program, are we, the goal is to, of course, provide housing that people can afford to live in and some of these very expensive buildings. But are we doing any analysis internally about what we're, the units that we don't need? I mean, the units that we don't have. What we know is we desperately need three-bedroom units. Is there a way in this multi-program to prioritize what we see as a gaping hole and housing resources for low-income people? And if so, how would you do that?
So being that inclusionary housing is required on any new building with over 20 units, it's very much so a market-driven program. So we don't have any direct influence on which units are actually being built by developers. Certainly there are some incentives such as the reconfiguration option within inclusionary housing that allows the developer to provide a few less units by reconfiguring into larger unit sizes, basing the requirement on bedrooms, total bedrooms, which we have seen, you know, folks participate in, but otherwise what the market is building is what units we're able to get from this program.
And so again, is there, will you have a analysis of what we've created with this program? Because I think there needs to be a legislative change. So with data about how many three bedrooms have we created through this program, how many two bedrooms? Because most of the multi programs you bring to us are studios and one bedrooms, right? And we have a lot of single people that need those. I'm not saying we don't, but I'm also saying, again, the biggest need is the two bedroom, three bedroom units. And this program is not actually helping us create enough two and three bedroom units. So again, you know, it may not be something you can do based on how the program was written, but I would be very interested in your analysis about what changes need to be made in the next legislative session so that we're actually not being driven by what developers want to build, but by what we need here in the city of Portland.
Well, and certainly there are, we have created a, you know, larger number of family size units with this program through the reconfiguration than we anticipated initially, certainly. And there are other zoning code changes the city has made, such as the three bedroom bonus created through the deeper housing affordability of portion of the Better Housing by Design program, that should provide some incentive to developers to produce more affordable, in particular, three bedroom units. Of course, it's still going to be up to developers as to whether or not they can make that pencil out and produce those projects.
Thank you for that, Dory. Let me just reiterate that I think it's really important for us to have really clear data about what we've achieved with this program so that we as a council will have the ability to deliberate about what legislative changes we might find necessary to achieve our goals. I don't know if this program at the beginning actually set any goals around studio one bedrooms, two bedrooms, and three bedrooms, and you're shaking your head no. So since we didn't, I think, again, coming out of this pandemic, it's really important that we be intentional. And then my last question is, can we reject these applications?
If we were to reject these applications, the result would be that potentially no affordable units would be provided, because as the program is written on, we're obligated to provide available incentives to the project that is complying with inclusionary housing, or the developer does not need to provide the affordable units at all if we're not able to produce the financial incentives through the exemption.
This is not the time for this conversation, but I would love to have a deeper conversation about, if this isn't the program, then we need another program that we're incentivizing nonprofit housing developers to actually develop the kind of units we need, right? So the market can do what the market wants to do, but we should not be incentivizing studio and one bedroom solely, right? And yes, for 90 years, but you know, I'm not going to be around 90 years from now. So I'm not quite sure what affordability will look like 90 years from now. So thank you very much. I'm always fascinated by this program, and you always provide really good information. So thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, we do have a monthly total of the production of the Inclusionary Housing Program that we share through the Portland Housing Advisory Commission. And I'll be sure to have staff forward that over to your office so that you can look at that as well.
Thank you. I know I'm not going to speak for Commissioner Ryan, but I know he has a heartfelt interest in this as well. And so if you would send it to both of us, I think we would both be greatly appreciative. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. I actually put my hand up right as you were speaking, and you did answer, you asked a lot of the questions that I would have asked. However, Dory, thank you for that presentation, and it's great to have a little cat, upstage cat moment that helps during this pandemic. I think I want, my question though is still around how they come, how this market driven decision's made. So this is in Southwest Portland. And is it the market, how's the market defined? What's the footprint of the market? So do we have a Southwest market, an Outer East Portland market? And some of my context on this is the last 10 years, I spent most of my time in East Portland, and I've always been well aware of the amount of large families, many new arrivals that are in one bedroom apartments. And it's something we should all be thinking about during this pandemic, what it's like for those parents to do virtual learning with their children with six kids sometimes in a one bedroom, two bedroom apartment. That's where I come from on this is I'm perplexed why it went from the two and three bedroom again to the studio and one bedroom. And I wanted to know if the market footprint is defined by quadrant, is it defined by the whole city of Portland? Do you have an answer to that question?
Sure. A short answer is no, I don't, you know, okay. It's really, obviously there's many components of putting together a project, and we're not involved in the financial structure that development projects, you know, in, as far as looking at it from a permitting standpoint, where we are with this level of involvement with the inclusionary housing program. So
I appreciate that, Joy. Could you look into that and get back to my office? That'd be really helpful.
Yeah, we'll
know what the footprint is of what the market is defined as. And clearly, I would love it if we saw more family-friendly housing that is affordable. And so it's hard to be passionate about this project when it comes to that. Thanks.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll just say quickly, I don't know how prescriptive we can get with this policy, but I do agree that when we see a building that has, and I'm not necessarily referring to this building in particular, but when we see a building that is mostly, you know, one, two, and three bedrooms, but the affordable units are studios, that doesn't feel really in the spirit of inclusionary housing. And I'm wondering if down the line we could tie the percentages further to the types of units represented overall. I hope that made sense. For instance, if it's 50% two bedroom apartments, then we want half of those affordable units to actually be two bedroom apartments. We have all sorts of market mismatches in our housing industry. One is obviously cost. The market is not building units in general that are affordable to average Portland renters. Location and proximity to jobs, as well as size. So I think this is like, it's an interesting and worthwhile conversation. I understand we can't do anything about it today, but I think it's worth exploring. Thanks.
I do want to just clarify, Commissioner Udaly, too, that the building itself has changed, and so the unit requirements changed because the building changed, and the building is no longer going to have the larger size units, and so that's why the affordable units changed as well.
Yeah, please just take my comments as broader comments about the program, not specific to this development.
Very good. Any further questions? Commissioner Ryan, it looks like you have your hand raised again.
No, that's just me forgetting to take my hand down.
No worries. Very good. Then at this point, I will ask, do we have any public testimony, Keelan, on 779 or 780?
No one signed up for either item.
Okay, very good. Please call the roll on, I'm sorry, no, we've removed the clause, so let me just do this. I just want to briefly mention that the status of the inclusionary housing program, if anybody's interested in that, is actually on the Housing Bureau's website. I think the second clarification I'd make, just based on the good conversation we just had, is that IH is one of several strategies that we're using through the Housing Bureau to fill the need for very low and low income housing. And as Dory pointed out during her presentation, the IH program gives options for developers to choose from. I have, however, directed both the Housing the IH program based on the data provided. So at some point, my expectation is we'll bring some revisions back to the City Council that can address some of the issues that have been raised by my colleagues. Item 779 is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance.
Mayor, I'm sorry, I'm confused. Why haven't we heard about 5460 North Interstate?
Dory, was there more you wanted to specifically cover on that item?
There is additional information in my presentation to.
I
need to hear about that. Okay. I have issues with that project.
We all have issues with that project.
All right, I can resume. So the second item is for the COES on North Interstate at 5460 North Interstate Avenue. So this is a new application. And under this option of inclusionary housing, the developer selected to restrict 15% of the units since it's within the outside of the central city. And those will be affordable at no more than 80% of median family income for 99 years. And so that amounts to 23 of the total 154 units that would have that restricted affordability. So in this case, 23 of the units will be restricted and 131 will remain at market rate rents over that 99-year period, regardless of how the market changes from now and then. The way that, and I'm sure this is what everyone wants to talk about, the way that and we'll look at the additional information on the rents. The plan for this development specifically for COES, and they've had a couple of other projects already developed within the IH program, as well as previously in the standalone multi-program around Portland. And they're somewhat unique to some of the other projects that we see in that there are some smaller units, particularly at the studio level, units that are developed intentionally to be below market. And at some times in some neighborhoods, in some markets, the rents for at 80% median family income level are close, if not less than what the market is. They're sometimes often the same. And so in this case, there was an attempt to come to market below that level for all of their units, even though that's below market. So that I can explain what that issue is. First of all, looking at the tax benefit, again, similarly to the last project that we reviewed, over a 99-year period, it would be about $100 per unit that would benefit the project. And so, you know, over, you know, per year, that's about $23,000-$24,000 for the building. And so then when we're looking at the actual market rents in the neighborhood, for not just this building, but market rents across the board in that area of Interstate, they're actually slightly below what the maximum rents would be for at the 80% level, even though this project has indicated that they won't be actually setting the rents at that maximum level, because they obviously the market's not there. We do still see a difference for the larger units where they would be, on average, the whole building would still have a $281 per month savings beyond, you know, on average per unit beyond the $100 a month exemption value over that 99-year period. So when we look at the total difference in rents, even just at the affordable level, it comes out to just shy of $52,000 a year. So if I go back, the rent differential for the total building from market to affordable is, you know, that difference of $23,735 with the just shy of $52,000 of a total building potential rent difference or discount. So I'm happy to find other ways to kind of talk through this or kind of discuss what the obligation is versus what the project is doing, as I do assume there are additional questions.
Commissioner Hardesty, then Commissioner Udaly.
Mayor Udaly was first.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Mayor. So this is an interesting situation where, just to be clear, the rent-restricted units could cost more than the rest of the units. There's, you know, Dory, you've shared that they don't intend to set those rents higher, but the reality is we're not getting cost savings from those particular units. So one thing that would help mitigate my concerns, and I once again didn't catch that information, when we look at how the tax abatement versus the rent discount shakes out over time, is the city still receiving more benefit in the rent discount than they're giving in the tax abatement? That's my first question.
So yeah, on average, on those particular units, not necessarily the way that it's, but if
overall,
if we extrapolate out over that 99-year period, the rent discount value of $281 per month compared to, and that's per month.
Yeah.
You know, compared to the $104 per year per unit.
Okay.
So there's obviously a big difference still.
So the refrain that I hear most often from developers about our inclusionary zoning policies is that they don't pencil out. So I would encourage those people to talk to this developer, because it certainly seems to be penciling out for them. I also want to just talk about market rate, the term market rate rent, which some people treat as if it's as immutable as the temperature outside. It is a construct, and it is unaffordable to the majority of renters in the city. So I want to commend this developer for building units that are more affordable, and really challenging the widely held belief that it's too expensive to develop affordable housing in Portland. And yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. And I'm interested in what my colleagues are thinking.
Thank you, Commissioner Udaly. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Dory. I guess for me, my concern is, are we setting a precedent by allowing a developer who may or may not manage the building after it's built to use inclusionary zoning and in fact have the market rate units be lower cost than the so-called affordable units? This is the very first time I've seen this play out since I've been on the city council. And I am very concerned that we are setting a precedent, because to say that at some point those studios will be affordable is kind of a ludicrous argument to support this proposal. And so could you talk about why you are recommending we approve this, knowing that the studios start off, knowing that developers don't traditionally manage buildings after they develop them? How do we know that whoever owns the building and it starts the process of filling it up won't within a year actually raise the rates and or even as they're develop, I mean, as they're starting to fill the building up, raise the rates so that the affordable unit continues to be costing more than the rest of the units, than the other ones comparable size would cost. Again, I've never seen this before, where we started off paying more for a unit that we're pretending is affordable. And would you, for just for the public record, tell us what 80% of median family income, what is the income you need in order to qualify for this quote unquote affordable unit?
Yes, I'll get back to you on that real quickly. But yes, so you have a number of points there, Commissioner Hardesty, thank you. And I think, you know, most clear is the point that, yes, this is the first time I've seen this play out exactly on a particular project as well. And this is a somewhat unique development approach for sure. That said, we do monitor compliance on the buildings throughout the 99-year period. So we will know what happens with the rents in the future. However, I don't expect, frankly, that they would have different rents for the affordable units and the market rate units, where the affordable units would be more expensive. There would be no reason for them, frankly, to do that. And then ultimately, they want to serve tenants that can afford to live there, and it wouldn't. But certainly, they have that option. They also, the program itself requires us to provide or make units affordable at the 80% level. And so that is the base program requirement. And then the other options that are provided were things that the city decided to pursue with the goal that more units would be at the 60% level. And in fact, the inclusion rates are lower, and to make that a more attractive option. And so, you know, staff actually did address this with the developer to just inquire as to, you know, make sure that they understood they were choosing an option that maybe that, you know, they could provide and have less units restricted over the 99-year period. And for whatever financial reasons, the number that they have moving forward to get their financing on the building was, you know, marketing all of the units at around 63% of median family income. And so you clearly made that choice intentionally to still have the 80% MFI level as far as the maximum requirement that they could have those set at. Since I've been talking, I don't know, Matt, have you had a chance to maybe look up the exact MFI level for the 80% units? I just don't have it at the tip of my fingertips.
Yeah, sure. So for the record, Matthew Schaubold with the Portland Housing Bureau. For an 80% of the median income is around $50,000 to $55,000 per year, depending on your household size for a family or a household that would live in the studio apartments. And just to kind of add on a couple of comments, you know, this is a tricky one in front of City Council today. So we appreciate the discussion. You know, the Housing Bureau's inclusionary housing program doesn't regulate what a developer can build in terms of types of bedrooms or the size of the bedrooms. It simply requires that a portion of those become regulated affordable housing. I would be very surprised if the market rate units were leasing at a particular rate. If the developer tried to also lease the affordable at a higher rate, I don't think they would find that to be successful. But we did want to present the information around, you know, what a comparable, you know, what the market rate rents look like compared to what the 80% regulated rents, what the cap was on those. You know, from the Bureau's perspective, you know, we have looked at this. And we think that because of the one-bedroom units, the non-studio units, the ones and the twos, we do think that the net impact is of value to the city in terms of the rent discount, even with the relative parity for the studios. But, you know, we wanted to have an honest conversation with City Council. And if the council decides not to proceed with the incentives that are required in the code, that is an option. And it would simply release the developer from any inclusionary housing obligation on the building. But yeah, this is the first I've seen this as well. And we should, you know, discuss it and work through it together.
So I'd like to jump in here. And I've been enjoying
the conversation and listening. I think the question here is affordability relative to the other units in the building, or affordability based on the overall market in Portland. And the program was designed with overall affordability relative to the cost of housing in Portland. That was the design of this program. It doesn't speak to individual, the interior of specific buildings. Is that accurate, Matt?
That is correct. You know, if you look at this just happens to be the development model of this developer, but if you look at the rents for both the market rate and the inclusionary housing compared to some of the more expensive neighborhoods in the city, or compared to the city overall, or compared to the neighborhood that they're building in, these are comparatively more affordable rents, both at the market rate level and, of course, at the regulated level. So they just happen to have that business model.
So one more quick comment, then I'll get to Commissioner Ryan. He's been waiting patiently. So the risk we take here, you know, if we don't do this, we have no other hook in terms of affordability. This is our tool that is available here on this project. And the question is, if we remove this tool, remove the IH requirement, would the building owner for certain reduce the cost of these inclusionary housing units relative to the other units in the building? That's basically the question, right? The risk that we would be taking.
Well, there would be no inclusionary units in the building.
Correct.
So no, there's no guarantee.
I'm just trying to figure out under what circumstance would the council decide not to do this. And the only example I can think of is if we believe that based on the remainder of the units in the building owner would choose to voluntarily lower the price of these units to be in alignment with the other costs, the other units in the building. But the inclusionary housing program does not anticipate this question. It is about a broader market dynamic, and the affordability is relative to the broader market. It's not relative to the other units in the building. I mean, conceivably, this building owner could say, we're going to lease everything at the market rate for $1 a month. They can do that. And so, therefore, the inclusionary housing units would still look more expensive by comparison. But relative to the market, the inclusionary housing units might still be affordable. And that is what we are assuming here. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
And Mayor, if I may
That's not the issue for me. The issue is if we approve this, we are setting a precedent that a developer can come in and say, we're going to add inclusionary units, but we're going to charge more for them. And if we approve this today, we are setting a standard that I have not seen in this entire program since I've been here. And so for me, that's the bigger question. It does relate to this unit, and there are issues with what's being proposed, especially in the two bedroom units. Because I got to tell you, if a one bedroom can be 580, but a two bedroom would be 548 square feet, I have a problem with that. Because once again, we're unequal in how this is going to play out for low income people. And so for me, the biggest concern is around, if we approve this today, we're saying it's okay for a developer to charge more for the affordability credit. And I don't know that that's the road we want to go down.
I'll turn this over to Commissioner Ryan, and then perhaps Matt or Dory would like to respond to that. Commissioner Ryan, thank you for your patience.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Mayor. This is a real head scratcher. I actually assumed there was a typo when I was looking at this. And it really, I've been listening, and it's clear as mud at the moment on what I've been taking in as a new person. And so I will stop at that. I do have two questions. One is, when was the market rate established? We are in unprecedented times, the word of the year. And did the developer make this decision pre-COVID, currently, when was the decision made on what the market rate was?
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll give a couple comments on that. The market rate rents in your council documents are rates we pulled for what the market rate rents are to relatively close to today.
Okay. So
trying to reflect, okay, what are the regulated affordable rents today and what are the market rate rents today? The developer, in all likelihood, is looking at what they think that they can charge for market rate rents in about a year or two. Once the building's actually constructed and leased up. And so those are estimates that they need to provide to the institutions that are financing their development. And they have to provide their own evidence to reassure the investors and the lenders that they could reasonably reach those rents and reasonably lease up their building. So it is tough to do the projection. Because, you know, we are looking at today's regulated rents and we are providing council with today's market rate rents as a comparison. But in reality, what the rents will actually be will be decided on the market rate units will be decided by what the market looks like in 2 years and what's being charged for studios and one bedrooms and two bedrooms and all of the entirety of the market, as well as the market in that neighborhood. So that is tough.
Thank you. That was helpful. And fasten your seatbelts on what that could look like in 2 years at this time. And if you're looking at trends in the big city of the South, San Francisco, there's some pretty good data that's showing that there's a real drop in monthly rates in their apartments because of the pandemic and adjustments people are making. And then for the record, I just am disappointed, and I don't know what our how we push back on this. So just for the record, it's disappointing when you look at the percentage of units that are affordable in the two bedroom category. I know there's one, it's 11%, but if you added two, it'd be, 22%, where the others are at 18 and 19%. So once again, the larger unit for family friendly affordable housing is the one that gets shortchanged. So just would like us to continue to try to push for larger units for families. And that's a great location for families in terms of access to schools and parks.
Make sure you do it.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, this is the policy we have to work with today. This is an unexpected kind of wrinkle, I guess, that we could potentially be getting affordable units that cost more than the other units in the development. However, because we are still receiving more benefit in rent discount than we are giving in tax abatement, I will support it. I wasn't sure, where we were coming up with a market rate, market rate rents. One of the shortcomings of this program is that market rate varies throughout the city depending on the neighborhood. And I think what's going on here is that this development is in an area with lower market rate rents than perhaps what, than average. And this is also a concern in East Portland, as we see an increase in production of housing in East Portland. And we pursue these ongoing conversations about displacement. If our inclusionary housing policy is generating affordable units that are above market rate in East Portland, that's going to be a real problem. So I will support this, but we need to dig in and figure out how to solve for some of these challenges. The other thing I want to say, it's relevant to the last item, but also to this one, is if we are seeing an overproduction in studios and one bedrooms, and we can't compel developers to offer larger units as their rent restricted units, then one of the solutions is we address our investments accordingly with the dollars that we have to build affordable housing, and we invest more in those 2 and 3 bedroom units. Thank you.
Commissioner Wright.
Sorry, I'm really bad at lowering my hand on here.
No worries. Dory, did you have something else you wanted to add earlier?
Yeah, I did just want to comment somewhat in response to Commissioner Hardesty. Thank you, Mayor. And, you know, just in general for all of the comments, to note that, you know, certainly even without inclusionary housing, this development is, because the tax exemption is front-loaded over the first 10 years, you know, the numbers that we're looking at are extrapolating out the value over 99, so the 99 years, but the value up front, because the exemption's provided over the first 10 years and then ends, actually is a large benefit to developers to kickstart the operations of the project right after construction and starting operations. And so really, again, since we don't know for sure, but one could imagine that all of the rents in the building, not just the studio rents, would increase without the tax exemption. So if we did decide to not provide it and not have the building be subject to inclusionary housing, it would result in more affordable units across the board, not just for the studios, but for the one bedroom and two bedroom units as well as they hit the market.
Very good, Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one more question. I know that we are beating this one to death, but I think it's important that this is actually on the public record. I have expressed concerns before about the square footage of affordable units versus market rate units. And let me just say, I'm pretty appalled that the one bedroom unit for affordability is actually going to be smaller than the than a potential studio for market rate units. When you look at the 1-2 bedroom unit, I just don't know how you get a 2-bedroom in the 545 square feet. And I am very concerned that we are creating inequitable housing choices for people who are low income. And let me just say, a individual making, so for the 2-bedroom unit, a two-person household, $52,100 a year, that is in no way low income. I mean, and in fact, many of the people who need the family units will not achieve that income to live there. And so I know that, again, you have nothing to do with, you can't tell the developer what to build, but we must be able to set equity when we are developing housing for low-income individuals. And I use it low-income in quotes because it's 80%, and I still think, you know, of course, that's another conversation. But the square footage continues to be inequitable when it comes to the low-income units as compared to the market rate. And I just don't know how you can put a 2-bedroom into 548 square feet.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner, for the kind of the questions and comments. And, you know, I would agree, and we can certainly look at, as far as the inclusionary units, you know, I know Dory before has gone over that they have to only be, they can't be smaller than in a particular range, and we can look at tightening that up. And I also think you just bring up good questions about our city's housing policy generally, regardless of the inclusionary housing program, around what's being built in terms of the number of bedrooms in units and the size of those units. And that's certainly something we'll convey to our partners at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability as they increasingly look at those questions of, you know, how are we building inclusive, both in terms of price, but also bedrooms and size for all communities in Portland.
Thank you very much for that. And I guess the last question that I don't think either of you tried to answer, which is, are we setting a precedent that we're going to start seeing more of these applications where the affordable units start off costing more than the market rate units?
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm certainly something we'll keep our eye on. I don't anticipate this. You know, we've talked about this internally a lot, and it just happens to be this particular neighborhood and this particular developer's business model. But given the size of the studio apartments, That in general in the marketplace, I don't know that this is something that can be broadly adopted across the market, because I don't know that developers would get financing for all of those projects across the market. But we'll definitely track it and keep our eye on it. If it becomes an issue, we'll come back to council for a briefing and provide options on how to proceed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate both of you, Matthew and Dory, for your very clear and intentional answers. Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. Good conversation. My question for Dory and Matthew is, what changes do we need to be prioritizing at the state legislature? Because certainly this program, we all agree, has our hands were tied right from the beginning. And so maybe not now, but I would encourage you, as we start formulating the legislative agenda priorities for next year, to take all of the good questions that you've heard over the course of this year and last, and come up with a list of things that we would like to see change.
Certainly. Thank you, Commissioner. And we have already started to discuss some ideas with our partners at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, particularly around the limitation to not require affordability below 80% of the median income.
All right, very good. And Robert had asked me to ask again if there's anybody you'd like to testify on either item 779 or 780.
We had one person sign up, but they're no longer on the call.
All right, very good. Any further discussion, colleagues, before we move these to second reading? I see none. Therefore, item 779 is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Item 780 is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It, too, moves to second reading. Next item, 781.
Authorize new construction financing in an amount not to exceed $16,754,923 for the 115th Street Housing Limited Partnership or a Central City Concern affiliate.
Colleagues, the 115th and Division Street Housing Development is the first Portland Housing Bond project that weaves PHB's capital funds with much needed support service dollars from the Joint Office of Homeless Services to provide housing for our most vulnerable residents. We thank the development team of Central City Concern, one of the city's key nonprofits that house many chronic homeless, and Related Northwest as project manager in bringing forward this project during these uncertain times when permanent supportive housing is needed more than ever before. The Division Street project will meet the critical needs of Southeast Portland and leverages off its location near the newly opened Blackburn Center that provides wraparound services. Today we have Shannon Callahan, Director of the Portland Housing Bureau, here with us. Hi, Shannon.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau, and I will be joined this morning by Mary Rains O'Meara of Central City Concern and Stephanie Condor of Related Northwest. And we are here to ask for your approval of the financing of the Division Street Apartments. Could we put the PowerPoint up, please, Keith, or do I need to do that?
We can pull it up for you just a moment.
Oh, thank you very much. So the Division Street Apartments is one of 12 bond projects that will help us meet and exceed our bond goals for deeply affordable units, permanent supportive housing, and family size units. It's one of three bond projects slated for East Portland. Thanks, Keelan. If you wouldn't mind, perfect, thank you very much. As you can see on this slide here, with the red circle, this is where Division Street Apartments will be located. Next slide, please. It is one of the 12 bond projects that have been identified, and it will be the third project to open to welcome new Portlanders to affordable housing. Next slide, please. The development itself is located, as the mayor said, at Southeast 115th and Division, and will be a true community asset in the Powell-Hurst-Gilbert neighborhood. Besides Central City Concern and related Northwest, ERCO and the Boys and Girls Club will provide on-site services for the families and residents of the new development and new community. Next slide, please. The Division Street project will be a beautiful new 138 four-story building. Seven of the units will be paired with intensive support services with people who were formerly homeless, for whom wraparound services will be helpful to their long-term success. Each and every Portland Housing Bond project will contain supportive housing units. And as the mayor indicated, this is through a partnership between the Housing Bureau and the Joint Office, and we are very grateful to them for providing the funding for the supportive housing. The project will also be part of our city's commitment to providing affordable housing along the Powell Division Transit Corridor. Construction is expected to begin next month, which is just in a matter of days, and be complete in May of 2022. Next slide, please. In addition to focused units for those exiting homelessness, the building will also be focused on providing housing for families in East Portland. 70 of the units are multifamily sized, so 2 and 3 bedrooms. In fact, 23 of the units will be 3 bedrooms. Of the 138 units, 46 are going to be serving those with extremely low incomes or households with median family incomes of less than 30%, which for an individual would mean that it is a person who makes approximately $19,000 a year or less. Next slide. The Division Street Apartments is taking full advantage of the constitutional amendment that state voters passed, allowing us to leverage funds with bond funding for affordable housing. As you can see by this slide, the project will receive over $16 million in bond funding, but will be leveraging an additional $27 million of other funding to make this 138 unit project possible. And with that, I would like to introduce Mary Rains O'Meara of Central City Concern, who will be followed by Stephanie Condor of Related Northwest.
Thank you, Shannon. I think we're going to flip the order on you, and I'll let Steph go ahead and present first in order.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, all. Almost good afternoon. I wanted to first thank Shannon and just introduce myself. I'm Steph Condor with Related Northwest. And Related Northwest actually opened their doors 2 years ago, and we have been able to swiftly bring about 5 affordable housing projects into development for the Portland metro area. We're really proud about this. This success is largely attributed to the great partnerships with folks like Central City Concern and Portland Housing Bureau. The 115th and Division Apartments, it really marks our second collaboration with Central City Concern and Portland Housing Bureau, a project that will be co-owned with Central City Concern. We're very excited to be able to offer to our residents CCC's comprehensive suite of services as well. I think folks may not know that Boys and Girls Club is going to be co-located at the site for an after-school program for the youth of the residential community at no cost to those families, which is a huge, I think, issue for families, low-income families and all families, especially now. And this is a first of its kind in this area, actually, to co-locate this Boys and Girls Club within affordable housing. And we're really excited to shepherd that through. As well, IRCA will be providing further outreach services for our communities of color and immigrant and refugee families, which are a large population out in this Southeast corridor. And that's all I wanted to say, and just thank you all so much for your support on this project. We're really excited to be the first to close on this funding, and we are very excited to get underway for construction. So Mary Rain, if you'd like to talk about Central City Concern's role, it would be great.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steph. Thank you, Shannon. And I am updating my notes to say good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, as we strike the noon hour here. My name is Mary Rain O'Mara, and I'm the Director of Real Estate Development at Central City Concerned. So we are very pleased to partner with Related Northwest on this important project. As you've heard, it will bring stable, affordable housing for 138 households in outer Southeast Portland. Our agency will be the lead services provider at the building, providing support and resources for all households, but including intensive case management for those residents of the 7 permanent supportive housing units. We are also very excited to partner with the Boys and Girls Club. This is a new partnership for CCC, and we all know that consistent engagement for school-aged children is an essential need for all families. So we look forward to this project's successful construction and eventual opening. And we also welcome this building as our neighbor to the Cedar Commons Permanent Supportive Housing Project that just broke ground in June, and it's just across the street from this building. So on behalf of CCC, thank you for your support for this project and for all affordable housing to serve Portland's residents in need.
Thank you.
So with that, Mayor, that concludes our presentation, and we would be happy to answer any questions that you or council may have.
Good. One's popped up. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Shannon, and CCC for this fabulous partnership. Let me just say, you listened through the last conversation we had about affordable housing and what's affordable and what isn't. And let me tell you, this project is one that I am enthusiastically supporting. It covers so many areas of desperate need in our community. And I wanna applaud the Boys and Girls Club for actually being co-located in this unit once it opens, because I visited a project in Atlanta that actually revitalized a very low income complex. And what I know is that when those services are embedded, it actually creates community because it allows other community members to engage with the people who live on this property. And I just can't say enough good things about the work that Central City Concern continues to do in our community and how grateful we are that we have such a strong partner that's absolutely committed to equity and ensuring that all people have an opportunity to live a very prosperous life. You know, this is as different as night and day from the one we just talked about. And this is one that I hope will be a national model for how you create a beautiful living environment for folks who are limited on resources. All of us want to live in a beautiful place, and we want to be able to be proud of our home. And so 2022 is not as far away as we're thinking, but I look forward to getting progress reports and helping you to remove barriers if any happen to show up. Thank you very much, Mary Rain, and thank you very much, Shannon, and all the folks who worked behind the scenes to put this proposal together. So believe it or not, Mayor, I actually didn't have a question at all. It was a very thorough presentation. I just had to take a moment to applaud your great work. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions at this point? Any public testimony, Keelan?
We had one person sign up, but they're not on the call any longer.
All right. Sorry to hear that. With that, then, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
I've already given my closing statement, so I'll just say I vote aye.
You, Daly.
Well, what a fantastic project, and with such great community partners. Very happy to support. Aye.
Fritz.
Ditto. Thank you for all your work. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. Timing is everything based on what we experienced just before this. Boy, this looks so good. I think I would have noticed that anyway. But I really want to acknowledge the partnerships, and that this is also in the David Douglas School District, I believe. in East Portland. And it's like I alluded to earlier, that's a part of town that really needs family-friendly housing that's affordable, especially for new arrivals. And so to hear that you're partnering with ERCO as well as Boys and Girls Club, that's really exciting. And just to acknowledge Aaron Hubert's leadership of Boys and Girls Club as we transition to the new CEO there, Terry Johnson. So they'll join Mr. Lee at ERCO, and that's a great partnership. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Rock solid. Looks great. I vote aye. Ordinance is adopted. Next item, 782, second reading.
Thus benefited properties for street, sidewalk, stormwater, water main, and sanitary sewer improvements in the Southwest 45th Avenue and California Street Local Improvement District.
Second reading. Any further questions or comments or business on this item? Seeing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Well, I just want to thank PBOT staff and St. Luke's for their patience with us as we did our due diligence on this item. We are now in full alignment with the property owners and all the concerns have been resolved. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Ordinance is adopted. Next item, 793, emergency ordinance. I'm sorry, 783.
Amend contract with Innovize, Inc. for hydraulic network analysis software in the amount of $756,473.
Commissioner Udaly. I'm sorry, Commissioner Fritz. I apologize. Commissioner Fritz.
You Thank scared you. Me, Mayor.
I did.
Wait, did you give me his bureau and not tell me? Sorry, Commissioner Fritz.
That's okay. So we did have the hearing on this last week. I understand that Commissioner Hardesty has some urgent business to attend to and will be leaving the hearing. Is that for the vote? Is that correct, Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you for that, Commissioner Fritz. I will say that your people did a stellar job of actually answering my questions. And I'm going to have an ask before they do their next RFP process that they go through the Technology Oversight Committee and have them review their plans before they sign the new RFP. I am happy today to support this effort.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Then we're ready for the vote. Thank you, Mayor.
Very good. And there's no further public testimony on this item. Is that correct, Keelan?
Correct. I think you had to leave last week, so that was why we didn't vote on it last week.
All right.
We weren't sure how many votes we'd have.
Works for me. Call the roll.
Hardesty.
Again, I just want to put on the record that I look forward to the Technology Oversight Committee reviewing any new RFPs around this project, and I'm very grateful to the staff for answering my questions and I'm sure was nauseating detail for them. Thank you very much. I vote aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you to the staff who, by negotiating this deal, are saving the ratepayers $200,000. I, for one, am just really happy to have a software program that does exactly what we want it to do, and I really appreciate the service of the company. Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thanks, everybody, for your great work on that. And the next item is 784.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Bulch Creek Trash Rack Retrofit Project Number E10583 for an estimated cost of $3 million.
Very good. This is also a second reading. Any further business on this item? Please call the roll.
Hardesty.
I feel so knowledgeable now because I now know what a trash rack is, because who knew prior to last week. I'm happy to vote aye.
Udaly.
Yes, that was also a very informative item for me because I still remember the first time I visited Forest Park as a student at MLC And ever since then, I've wondered what exactly that thing was, although I knew it was for filtering something, and what it was called. And it's called a trash rack. That is the technical term. I vote aye.
Fritz?
So we started this meeting honoring Commissioner Fish, and this is part of his legacy. When in the olden days, BES would put things on the agenda with very little explanation and certainly not with the great visual presentation. And Commissioner Fish understood that in order for people to understand what we're doing and why, and indeed that people might want to know what is that thing and what is it called, to do these presentations. And so I appreciate that I now can just introduce them rather than having to put in the amount of effort that Nick and his team did to establish the process. So thank you very much, team. Well done. Aye.
Ryan?
I vote aye.
Wheeler?
Yeah, I remember that presentation last year that we got on the trash rack. I found it very informative. And I remember at the time, a number of us were pretty impressed with it. So thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for your comments and reminding us of that and reminding us of Commissioner Fish's commitment to making sure we all understood what a trash rack actually was. That was a good council moment and a great memory. I'm happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thanks, everybody, for your good work on that. Colleagues, we now have a 4/5 agenda item, 784-1.
Adopt emergency temporary moratorium on evictions for residential tenants throughout the city of Portland.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you for coming together to file on emergency temporary moratorium on evictions for residential tenants in the city of Portland. The city's moratorium follows the lead of Governor Kate Brown's extension and Multnomah County Commission's extension of this protection. This brings us into alignment. The pandemic has underscored the importance of housing as a vital ingredient for a safe, stable, and healthy city. The ordinance also clarifies when rent is due for people who are unable to pay rent from October 1st, 2020 to January 8th, 2020. Because of the City Council's action, households which are struggling, whether they've lost their jobs or lost some of their salary or experienced setbacks during the pandemic, will have some more time to pay the rent. To be clear, they will still owe the rent, but this gives them an extension on that time to be able to pay the rent. The city will continue to prioritize policy changes, investments, and advocacy efforts to help boost our local businesses, bring equitable and sustainable stimulus packages forward, and connect households with funding that's made available. I also want to note that while this action is focused on evictions for residential tenants, my office in Prosper Portland will be reconvening with local businesses and leaders to identify a way to mitigate foreclosures of our local businesses. For people interested in being part of these conversations, please contact my staff lead, that's Contram, for more information. I want to thank the Portland Housing Bureau, especially Director Shannon Callahan, Molly Rogers, Leslie Goodlow, and Matt Schabel for working with community advocates, renters, housing providers, and property managers in helping us to shape our overall COVID-19 relief measures. I also want to recognize the governor's action to extend the foreclosure moratorium before extending the eviction moratorium. I want to thank you, Governor Brown, and Multnomah County, and our city staff, especially Elizabeth Edwards, Stacey Cowan, and Dan Eisenbeiss, who helped us coordinate our approach to making sure Portlanders are able to weather the pandemic in a safe, dry, and stable set of housing conditions. Finally, I urge Congress and the President to pass the comprehensive stimulus package that brings the necessary recovery dollars for an equitable COVID-19 response. This obviously is not a problem unique to Portland, and this is not a solution that benefits only a few. The health and the safety of our city depends on COVID-19 relief that makes sure that everyone can remain in their homes. The Portland Housing Bureau is here to answer any questions that people have. I think, Matt, you're playing first fiddle on this one. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm really just here to answer any questions of the council. Okay.
Questions anybody has about this item? Not seeing any Keelan, do we have any public testimony on the 4/5 agenda item?
No one signed up.
Please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Let me just say I'm very grateful for being able to pass this today. However, I want to be really clear. At the end of this, people will still not be able to pay their rent. And we need federal support. We need state support. And we need to do a full court press to make sure that we are getting the resources necessary to keep as many people housed as possible. And so I'm very happy to vote aye.
You, Daly.
Well, I'm also grateful that we're taking action to provide renters peace of mind and stability as this crisis continues. That said, the county's extension came days before the state moratorium was set to expire. Had the governor not extended the moratorium Monday, it would have expired today. We cannot keep cutting it so close to the wire, not when renters' housing stability is at stake. So moving forward, I really want to work closely with council and encourage us to take more timely action before this moratorium expires in January. While it is out of our hands, I'm disappointed to see the governor's recent extension did not include a 6-month repayment window, which is crucial to keep renters housed after the emergency. Many renters will struggle even to catch up within 6 months, but certainly not giving any kind of grace period is going to lead to a lot of people losing their housing. There has also been no action to extend the commercial eviction moratorium, which I wholeheartedly support. This crisis requires us to all work together. We have to fight for residential and commercial tenants as well as property owners. As Commissioner Hardesty mentioned, we need our state and federal partners to intervene to prevent a complete disaster when these moratoriums are finally lifted and people will face arrears of thousands and thousands of dollars. We need relief for landlords and lenders. We do not have the city resources to cover this all ourselves, and we can't afford to see tens of thousands of people displaced or an estimated doubling of our homeless population if we do nothing. I appreciate the steps we've taken at the city and county level, and I'll continue to support and promote needed protections throughout the pandemic. Absolutely has to be a legislative priority for us in the new year or in the rest of this year too. I vote aye.
Keelan, we're
I didn't hear my name.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fritz. No.
I was like, you know what, it's my turn. I'm sure I can just go ahead and talk. I don't actually have to get called upon before weighing in. Anyway, thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for bringing this really quickly and for your acknowledgement that, yes, renters are going to need ongoing help. You also have acknowledged that the property owners are going, some of them are in desperate straits, and not all the banks have allowed foreclosure protections. Many of them have said that as soon as the pandemic's over, all of the past due mortgage payments are then due, rather than adding those additional payments on at the end of the mortgage, which seems absolutely ridiculous and cruel. So we do need to make sure that housing is provided both by assisting renters and by assisting property owners, and recognizing also that the property owners have maintenance needs and urgent things that need to be taken care of, that they're not, some of them, getting any income during the pandemic. So we do appreciate those who are able to pay or to arrange payments options with their providers. I think that we found in the Water Bureau that many people want to get onto a payment plan even if they're not able to pay the entire bill. And so we are all in this together. And if we can just be thinking about each other's needs and seeing how we can all get through it, that will be the best way forward. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you. I'm in alignment with my colleagues on this and with the county. It makes sense that we have this lever we get to play at this time. I will give voice to the MAPA housing providers. I've heard from several, a couple of them, their whole income is based on their duplex. And when one person hasn't been able to pay for 6 months, they're suffering too. And they're not the landlord stereotype that sometimes we hear about. It'd be interesting to see the number of those type of providers we have in Portland. I think it's a high percentage than we might realize. And I do look forward to working with my colleagues to come up with some creative solutions during this time of shared sacrifice, so we can keep the scrappy river city full of those types of housing providers. And they often provide housing for those that are that really need affordable housing. That's the true affordable housing in our city. So I just want to make sure we don't, that we give attention to that group. And I look forward to working on some policy that can be helpful to them. And I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Thanks everybody for your hard work. The 4/5 ordinance is adopted. And Keelan, that completes our agenda for this morning. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Very good. We'll see you at 2:00. We are adjourned.